You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today at our show, I'm talking with Alison Jackson. She's calling me from Chelsea in London. Alison, thanks so much for being with me today.
Well, lovely. Thank you very much for interviewing me. That's great.
Alison, I want to talk about what you're working on at the moment. I know you're in the process of a tour, but and working on a lot of things. But if you could just tell me what it is that you're working on now, so we can introduce the listeners to some of your work.
Well, I'm continuing a series of photographs and short films clips on Donald Trump, believe it or not. So he's the sort of headline socials, headline news around the world, and particularly interesting as a celebrity and the new president. So he's a fascinating character for me to actually look at. He features in the book that I've just done, and I'm looking to do other projects. He's also in an art show exhibition that I'm just having in New York at the moment, and also hope to show the work in Chicago. So it's an ongoing series about how we think we know celebrity intimately, but actually we only know them through their output, their socials, their media output, the imagery that they choose to put out. And I'm showing the behind the scenes of that, totally staged using actors and lookalikes.
Yeah, I want to talk about the book and also some of your process and what you're doing in your travels. But the book that recently came out is called Private. Is that correct?
Yes. So I've made a book called Private with celebrities doing things in private behind the public image of themselves, behind their public facade. And I'm interested in the real private person behind the celebrity image. And the book features multiple different celebrities doing things that we wouldn't normally see, that we've all imagined that we haven't seen before.
And to talk a little bit about them, because I want to get into your process, but so the listeners understand, these are often very well-known celebrities, from the Queen of England to Kanye West to Trump and many others, that, as you're saying, we have a tremendous output in terms of social media and press around the world. And the images that you're taking look remarkably, because I have your book, they look remarkably like the celebrity themselves. At first glance, you wouldn't notice the difference. If I saw one of your images in a magazine that was talking perhaps about Kanye or the Queen or Trump, I could look at your image and not think that it was a lookalike in that image. I would most likely think that image is a journalistic image, is an image of fact. So just to be clear about how I see them, and I imagine how the public sees them, perhaps it's a little different when gallery goers are in there and they understand what's happening. But your images are...
Well, that's right. I mean, the gallery really allows a debate to happen because you know they're not real, but they look absolutely real. So it allows the debate to take place, which is we're all totally confused as to what is real and what's not now in the age of imagery, TV, film, internet, socials. We really cannot ascertain what's authentic anymore. And I'm trying to raise questions about that you really can't rely on your own perception when it comes to imagery. Editors in traditional media editing and cropping the images so it tells a story that may be different from the original truth of the story or the full truth of the story. And on the socials, the same thing is happening as a follow-on. So I find it, you know, fascinating that we're living our lives through this when we we cannot tell what's authentic anymore, and where is that going to lead. My images look authentic, and they are authentic in the sense that it is John Smith. It's just not the person you think it is. That's Donald Trump, for example. So it's authentic in the sense that John Smith really has got into a spray tan booth and is having a spray tan. You think it's Donald Trump, it's John Smith. So I'm very, very interested in that debate of how we live our lives in this way at the moment. And we choose to believe imagery, even though there's a chance, a 99% chance, that we're not looking at something that's totally real.
And this is, of course, also an issue of photography itself, right? I mean, there's
the very nature of photography.
Right, that have appropriated images, but photography itself, we'd like to think of, or perhaps the public that's looking at that aren't maybe going to art galleries and museums or aware of the art world, see photographs as documents of fact, as journalistic tools, when in fact part of what you're, I think, articulating and sort of riffing on the form of is that photographs can and very often do lie, in fact.
Well, I'm proving that the camera lies because my photographs look totally real. Well, hopefully they do. But they're not. They're completely staged. And I want people to know they're staged because I'm trying to raise questions about this. I'm not trying to pass them off as real because there's no interest in that for me. They are staged images that look totally real. And, you know, the camera lies. And it certainly doesn't tell 100% truth.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about what you've been doing in the past few weeks, because I know you've been to New York where you had a show, and Chicago, and L.A., and you travel to Venice as well. And while you're traveling around, you're also, in a sense, casting for new roles, right? Casting for another Trump or casting for other celebrities that you're going to use. Is that correct?
I'm constantly casting and on the lookout for people who look like famous people. So if you know anyone who looks like Donald Trump or the Queen or Kanye West, please let me know, because I'm very, very interested in always finding new subjects, new actors, new lookalikes. People don't have to have done it before. I just highly stage and craft the whole situation to make them look like somebody else, somebody famous. And it's a whole process in itself with wigs and color and orange and noses and all sorts of other things that I can do to make someone look identical to the real deal. So at the moment, I'm hopefully doing a new show. I'm looking for a variety of famous people that look like, and it doesn't mean to say that I haven't already got people who are good in their profile or side angle, but I may want to find somebody who's good face on or from a different angle or a different body shape, because the face, it can be very different from the whole demeanor of the person. So I sometimes work with 5 or 6 different fake, if you like, celebrities that can make up a body of work, and you think you're just looking at one person, but you're not. You're looking at 6 different people.
So the casting is such a big part of your work. Tell me a little bit about how that happens. So when you're in New York or LA or Chicago, are you always doing casting? And is it by word of mouth? Because that seems like a huge project in itself and ongoing, how you find people. And then I guess you have to see them. And is it not just to see them, or you have to photograph them to see how they photograph?
Well, indeed, it's an extremely difficult process, and it's, you know, it's very painful. You know, I find myself running after people in the street, and sometimes when I stop somebody, they really don't like to hear that they look like Donald Trump or somebody else. So, you know, I get a lot of rude comments back, which makes it very difficult for me. And, you know, when I was originally casting for a Donald Trump lookalike, people wouldn't, or the ones that really looked like Donald Trump wouldn't come forward. And if they did, they would put the phone down on me and eventually tell me to shove off in no uncertain terms, which is very painful when I'm trying to, you know, work and find someone to create my work. That, you know, effectively the lookalike or the person is a material for me to create an artwork.
Sure.
So it's just a very crucial and awkward stage of the event. And then you've got a room full of Donald Trumps or Kim Kardashians or Kanye Wests, and that's very confusing and very interesting. Generally, a lot of people turn up and they don't really look anything like the real celebrity, but they've just turned up because, you know, they want to have a touch of fame or it's a fun idea. And so I spend a lot of time with people who look nothing like the real person, but their story is very interesting of, you know, why they've come forward or why they look like someone famous.
Right, but these people are also not only are they coming forward, but they're not in most cases not models or actors, and not only do you have to ask them, but I imagine you have to kind of convince them and explain to them why this is important and valuable, which is a whole other process.
Well, that's right, and it's very difficult to explain that. And then the sort of images I'm creating are images that people have never seen before, images that people have imagined in the back of their mind somewhere, but they've never actually seen these images. And often those images are controversial or highly private or scenes that people, you know, don't dare think about. And I've got to persuade these people who've never done anything on camera before at all to suddenly get into these compromising positions and situations, which I have to say is extremely difficult. And I do run into a lot of trouble. I get a lot of, you know, comments back.
You mean comments back from the model that you're using, essentially?
Yes, I do. It's very, very difficult. I mean, you know, because a lot of people don't like it. By the end of it, of course they do, because it's a process, and then they see this imagery coming out at the end, and they sort of can't believe it. You know, I remember making up one model, I hate to say it, as Bin Laden. So he'd started off as just a normal-looking guy. There was no mirror in front of him, so he wasn't seeing the process without a beard and no hair on his face at all and no turban. By the time he finished, he had a turban and hair all over his face, and he just looked at himself in the mirror and screamed. I mean, he really couldn't believe that the whole process had absolutely transformed him into a different person. So with the right lighting and the right camera angles, it's difficult. I'm like a portrait painter. So I will ask people to sit for a long time, move a millimeter to the right, a millimeter to the left, a millimeter up or down. It's excruciatingly boring and difficult for the actor or the person who's looking like somebody. But the result is they look identical to the real person, and that is the extraordinary thing. And sometimes I'm surprised myself. I can't believe that I've made somebody who looks nothing like the real person into the looking almost identical to the real person.
It is an extraordinary kind of transformation, because of course when I looked at your book, you know, I was thinking the same thing and showing it to my son, and you know, who is also familiar, as so many people are, as really everyone is, with all the all the celebrities and characters you use, and that's what's kind of wonderful, because that is the what's the deceptive, potentially deceptive nature of photography, but also what's somewhat magical about photography and lighting and approaching it as a portrait painter. As you're saying, you're creating images as opposed to so-called taking images. These are narrative and creations that you're inventing, not just through makeup, but you're also creating the story itself that you're photographing.
That's right. So the next thing is then to create the narrative. In a photograph, that's different from creating a clip or a film. And it's much more difficult in a photograph because you have to create one single frame. I always try and make it extremely fast read, so it's eye to psyche and sticks in your memory. Immediately you see it, you laugh or you feel before you even looked at the whole image, and then it can't be removed from your imagination because the composition is created or designed, so it won't be. So there's a whole sort of method to that, but it's very difficult to create that every time you're creating a new narrative. So that's one thing. And then people have got to look at this photograph for, say, 20 years, and it's got to be believable, both in narrative, plausible in narrative, and believable in terms of the likeness. So it's absolutely an unforgiving, static medium that you can't fool in one way, which is very interesting when the very nature of photography actually is potentially one big lie. The whole medium of photography is deceptive, and the whole concept of my photography, or this concept of my photography, is designed to discuss deceit through imagery.
And of course, you're talking about, I mean, as you just said, static images, still images, but you've also worked with video and film. Is that correct?
Well, it's much easier in video and film, yes, because if you're designing if you're making a clip, you know, you just have to set the scene up once so you see who it is, and then you've got the back of the head and the narrative that you may or may not be familiar with, but you've never seen it before. So it's much easier in video, and if you're creating longer form, like an hour or that length of time, I've done television shows of long length, you know, fake biographies. You know, the real Marilyn Monroe, for example, that type of thing, then you've got the whole narrative to play with. So the lightness in every different shot, it doesn't get scrutinized to the extent that a still photograph really continually gets scrutinized and is unforgiving.
In a kind of short biography as well, a short biography film, as you're saying, like about Marilyn Monroe or somebody else, the narrative that you're creating then is also broader and deeper. You have to be a writer and director, and now you're, well, I suppose a single image does that too, but I would think with video and film, your narrative, the story, so to speak, of what's being told becomes more complex.
It does, but I'm interested in the story that we've all imagined but we've never seen before, the private story, which is not, well, it's not difficult for me because I'm trying to imagine it all the time. And it's just another medium for me. I'm a creative person, so I would not want to stick to one medium. I'm a sculptor, actually. If you want to go back to what I really sort of did in university, I went to art college and I was a sculptor. It wasn't for any other reason that I studied my master's in photography, other than I just took photographs of my sculptures. So I didn't have any physical sculptures to show the committee board during my master's interview. So they said, well, you're only taking photographs. And I said, yes, so they're photographs of my sculptures. And they said, well, in that case, you're going into the photography department. off I went into the photography department. So, you know, it's a very strange way.
But that's interesting. That's interesting because, of course, photography has a special relationship to sculpture. You know, when sculptures photograph from, you know, Brancusi's photographs to other well-known photographers that have photographed everything from, you know, medieval and Renaissance sculpture to contemporary sculpture, it seems to have this special relationship where, I don't want to just say it brings the sculpture alive, but something else happens or can happen when sculpture is photographed, as opposed to sculpture being painted or drawn, that there is something very, very unique about the relationship between photography and sculpture, which seems not too unlike what you're doing now.
Well, it isn't. I think it's very similar, and I think that's how I actually started to question the whole very nature of photography and how we believe things when we shouldn't in the age of imagery that we live in. And so I was creating three-dimensional sculpture, dealing with people to figure. I was doing figurative sculpture. So first of all, you deal with a real person, then you're creating a material real person. And then I was photographing them. So the questioning and the discrepancy between the real, the copy of the real, and then the copy photograph of the copy real, if you see what I mean, was an absolute questioning debate for me. And that's why I started to question all of these mediums and, you know, why are we living our lives through something that is purely a reproduction and a copy? And if copy or copies allow you to lie, copies, imagery allows politicians or anyone to lie very, very easily. And for me, this was, intriguing and a much bigger subject than that, based on, what does authenticity mean and where is that going in the history of us? And that all came out of sculpture as the intermediary thing. So you have something three-dimensional or a real thing, and then you look at the image of the real thing, and what's the difference? And so I was creating three-dimensional imagery at one end of the room and two-dimensional imagery of the same thing at the other end of the room. And I suppose I was asking people to tell the difference when they walked into that room. Could they tell the difference if there was anything real, or was it all fake in this room? And that's how I started my thinking process.
And one other question I wanted to ask.
If that makes sense. I mean,
it does make sense. There's a lot of layers there. So here's one more layer. As you create the images that you've done recently and continue to produce them, and it's possible, of course, that some of these images could make their way into the media as well as videos, and be used even by journalists as fact. Is that something that, and not as art, not as Alison Jackson's work, but as something that is, a stolen image, a private image, a leaked image. Is this ever a problem, and is that something that you've thought about it all?
Generally, yeah. Well, it, with the whole fake news debate, it's interesting. I always make sure that people know that these images are not real. And generally, the traditional media always say, this is one of my images, so that you know what I'm trying to do. I did an image recently that went viral and was trending on the socials, and it eventually got back to me a day later with a comment on it saying, gosh, look at this real image, download it now, because if you don't, it's going to be, it's so controversial, it's going to be taken off the socials. And that I found really interesting, because I only got it back because it was sort of going viral and going everywhere, that it was part of, people thought it was real. My comment is, you can't rely on your own perception when it comes to imagery. Everything has to be considered to be a lie, and or being used as some kind of PR tool or some kind of tool to make money. You know, I watched a clip on the news of Donald Trump rehearsing his speech in a car a couple of days ago, and it looked staged, actually, but it was just a wonderful play on something that was meant to look candid, but a bit staged, but it's very delicious to watch someone acting and trying to make it look like it's candid. You know, remember Tony Blair, our Prime Minister a few years back? He was a master at that. He was an incredibly good, bad actor. And the bad acting was his success, because you could see him trying to please the people. And the people enjoyed seeing him trying so hard and acting badly hard that he was a massive success, even though most of what he said was not truthful. Well, that's certainly what we believe here in England. And it's a really interesting concept. That's why I can't believe that we're going to stop believing that imagery is not telling the truth. We know it doesn't tell the truth, but we can't stop ourselves but believing it. We can't stop ourselves being seduced by it. And that's the danger of it. It's a highly seductive and powerful medium.
Well, and I think your work is obviously one way to bring about this discussion, and I'm glad we're talking about this, and that you said that specifically just now, because as we enter into this age of fake news and not knowing what's real and what's not, art like you're making, the imagery you're making, is one way to help us all understand that finding facts is much more difficult than you might think. It takes, I would imagine, just to talk a little bit about what does it take to actually reach a fact, it's much more research and not relying on your own eyes, as at the very least. Is that correct?
The thing is, that's right, but the power of the image is so powerful that you don't bother to read the text. You just look at the image, and then the text is like, you know, too long-winded and slightly boring to even get through once you've seen an exciting image. So I don't know quite where this leaves us in terms of our future, in terms of news. Because it's all to be questioned, all of it. You know, alternative facts, fake news, traditional media, publicists, you know, it's all a question mark. And, you know, I'm raising questions about that, and I find the whole debate fascinating, and I would love to have an answer. But I suppose once you start realizing that, and really realizing that imagery is misleading, then, and particularly news imagery, that hopefully we can address that and do something about it.
Alison, it's wonderful talking to you about this, and I'm so glad you've done the work you've done. For the listeners, if they want to buy your book, there's links to it in this interview, as well as more on your website. Before we go, I want to ask you the question that I ask everyone at the end, which is, it could be off topic or not, but what is it that you're reading at the moment?
Well, I mean, I hate to say this, but I'm reading The Art of the Deal. Can you believe it? And, you know, just as a matter of research. But whether that's true or not, is also an interesting question mark, because obviously it has actually been written by, it's an autobiography.
It was ghostwritten. That's Donald Trump's autobiography. That was ghostwritten by another writer.
Yes, that's right. So there's all sorts of alternative facts, no doubt. But I would say about my book, because we've been talking quite seriously about it, and it is a serious subject, but one way that I've tried to get people to engage with my photographs is make them interesting or amusing or witty or sharp, you know, various different tones, so that they are engaging. Because what I wanted to do is to be as seductive as imagery is itself. So in fact, however revolting you may find some of the subject matter of my photographs, I am trying to seduce you to look at them and engage with them and not put the book down. So in that sense, I'm trying to do the very thing that the nature of photography does. So I hope that it does that. I hope that it's an interesting book to look at, I suppose I'm saying. But, and my last note would be, does anyone look like Donald Trump out there? I've got the wig. If anyone's got the face.
Allison, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure talking to you about your work.
Oh, well, it's really lovely to talk to you. Thank you very, very much indeed for interviewing me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.